To set the mood this morning as we begin this brand new series on prayer, I want us to right away to begin to take a glimpse of just part of the life of Jesus that I think many of us just don't spend time reflecting on. Descriptions of the life of Jesus that I think most people just see as kind of like transitions. They're just verses in the Bible to prepare us for what's coming next. You know, the main stuff of Jesus's life, his miracles, his preaching. Oh, these are just side comments. Well, here are supposedly these side comments that we read from the first few biographies of Jesus. First one comes from Mark chapter 1, verse 35. Here's what we read. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, so this is, you know, before the 91 freeway is jammed packed, Jesus, he got up, he left the house, and he went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Apparently, Jesus is a morning person. Luke 5, 15 through 16. Yet the news about him spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. So, I mean, crowds of people are coming to Jesus. I think this is one of the most crazy verses because we read this next. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Perhaps Jesus is an introvert. Luke 6:12. One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray. And he spent the night praying to God. So not only is Jesus a morning person, he's a night owl. He is God after all. Matthew 14:23, this will be the last one we look at. And after Jesus had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. And later that night, he was there alone. I just mentioned those four passages, and there's a whole larger slew of them. To say and to show you that prayer was essential to the life of Jesus. Jesus, God in flesh and fully human as well, woke up early in the morning before the sun was out. He was up all night, alone by himself, just praying and crying out to the Father. And so I love what Paul Miller says. He says, Jesus is without question the most dependent human being who's ever lived. What a fascinating thing to think about God in flesh. Jesus is without question the most dependent human being who's ever lived. And so the question maybe kind of guiding this whole series for us is this. If Jesus, if his life was built on and formed by prayer, how much more should ours be? And that's honestly why we're doing this series. And so I think as we approach the end of summer and we launch into fall and we kind of enter this new season, I think perhaps for New Life, this is a season to be reignited, to be invited, to go back to just the simple but necessary and profound practice of Jesus. Just praying. And it's interesting, the last couple of weeks as I've been preparing for this series and thinking it through, prayer is such an interesting topic in our culture right now. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One, even if someone's not religious, they're usually open to prayer. I can honestly say I've never met, you know, an atheist or whoever else, someone who's not a Christian, who doesn't believe in God or doesn't believe in prayer. And if I offer to pray for them or something, they don't say, oh, Mark, I don't believe in that. Don't pray for me. Yeah, I mean, like everyone's open to receive prayer. Prayer is also a great way to start conversations of faith, to be a witness. Even other faith systems. So if someone is Jewish, if someone is Muslim, many of the Eastern practices, Eastern religions, all of those practice and believe in some shape or form of prayer. I mean, there seems to be just kind of this universally shared experience, this longing to talk to God. And we can't rationalize it. We can't explain it. And so, of course, another kind of thing about prayer now is that it's mysterious. And I think because of that, because it's mysterious, now with the rise of education and technology, we have more money than we ever have before. I think some people are on the opposite end and they're like, well, what's the point of prayer anymore? I mean, we don't need to pray to God for help. I mean, surgery can fix something. Just pop in another Motrin. Or there's more nonprofits now that help deal and solve with a lot of social issues. I mean, you can even, people, you know, used to joke around like pray for a date. You can just go online now and book yourself a blind date. You know what I'm saying? Like, you, in some respects, you don't even have to pray for that anymore. And so why pray? Right? Technology, education, so on. Here's another factor that I think makes prayer very interesting in our culture. As I've gotten older, you know, I pay more attention to the news and when tragedies hit or a crisis. And it's interesting. What do you always hear about when there's a tragedy or crisis? All of a sudden, everyone starts to pray. And let me be clear, I'm not being insensitive here. I think we should absolutely be praying when there's a crisis or a tragedy. Absolutely. But I guess my question back to that, and I would do it in a very graceful way, is simply, well, why aren't you praying when things are going well? Is it just during times of crisis and tragedy that we're praying? And so then related, you know, I'll be in a lot of conversations, and this is a very Christian culture observation here. How often are we in a conversation with someone and they are sharing some unfortunate thing that is happening to them? And a lot of us will respond with, oh, you know what? Hey, I'll be thinking of and praying for you. Or maybe you'll write it in a card or on Facebook, or you text someone, you email them and say, hey, I'll be praying for you. And let's just be real. I'm guilty of this too. I've said that before and I don't end up actually praying for them. I mean, I think we toss out the phrase like, oh yeah, thoughts and prayers, I'll be praying for you. I mean, how many people actually then end up praying for them? If you do, God bless you, you're a saint. But we even just toss out the idea of prayer very lightly. And then here's the deal. Even when we spend time in prayer, I think we end up falling asleep. You get distracted by your iPhone, right? And then you enter the cycle of then feeling like guilty and ashamed that you did that. And then prayer becomes something that's forced, something that feels like an obligation. And then we swing full circle and we read these verses about the life of Jesus and him spending early mornings and nights in prayer. And you're like, wow, yeah, I totally wish I had that prayer life. Like, I think we all say that, but man, that just seems so unrealistic and untenable. That is the complexity of prayer in 2018. But if you look at the life of Jesus, and for that matter, I think if you look at any mature Christ follower who takes their faith seriously, who is flourishing in it, pretty much every single one of them will say, prayer is the foundation and the core of you having a vibrant, growing relationship with God. And so, you know, does that mean that you have to say these like long, elaborate, fancy prayer requests, right? Saying the words just in the right way at the right time so that God gives you the right answer to your prayer request? That's what the pagans were saying at the time of Jesus. But prayer, according to Jesus, is actually so much more simple and thankfully so much more profound than that. So we're going to open up to Matthew chapter 6, verse 9. If you have a Bible, go ahead and turn there. If you need one, we have free Bibles available. Page 678, chair backs in front of you. And this is, I mean, this is probably the most common passage on prayer in the scriptures. It's commonly called the Lord's Prayer. I'll get into why I think maybe it should be renamed. And what Jesus is doing here, Jesus is simply just giving a very clear template to teach us, to show us, to model for us how we should pray. Quick plug, this morning we are just looking at the first half of it. So make sure you come back next Sunday. Make sure you always come back the following Sunday. But next Sunday we're doing part two of this. So we're splitting the Lord's Prayer right in half. So this morning is just the first half. Actually, you know, I want us to read this out loud together, okay? So we'll put the words up on the screen. Matthew chapter 6, verse 9. Some of you may know it by heart. So let's read this out loud together. This then is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. So like I said, we are splitting this right in half, and this morning is just part one. And what's interesting to me, and I have never realized this till this past week when I was researching this, have you ever thought about Jesus' disciples, who he is teaching this prayer to, was prayer new to them? No. I mean, these are presumably Jewish male teenagers, they're young, they would have grown up in their faith tradition as good Jewish boys, praying three times a day. So, you know, they prayed before a meal. When Sabbath was beginning, they would pray. Whenever they would go to the synagogue, which is kind of their form of a church service, they would pray. So prayer was not new for them at all. And I just think that's an interesting connection, because I think for many of you right now, I would probably think inside you're thinking, okay, well, prayer, like, why are we talking about this? I know all about prayer. That's probably what they were thinking. And so to me, it's astonishing that Jesus says, oh, hey, by the way, this then is how you should pray. And central to this kingdom prayer, and this is huge this morning, is that you have to understand who you're praying to. What is this God like? Because here's the thing, everyone prays. Okay, most people pray. But I don't think most people know who they're praying to. And that changes everything. So Jesus says, our Father, your prayer life, hey, listen to this, your prayer life is entirely dependent on how you view God. Okay? Let me run through some examples. I think some of us maybe think of God and prayer as kind of like this genie bottle, that if we just rub it the right way, we just say the right words, poof, God will give us what we want. The problem with that understanding of God and that understanding of prayer is that prayer then actually just turns into this giant laundry list for you. I want this, 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 and this, and so now I'm just going to say it to God, and I'll say it the right way, and I'll get what I want. That's genie bottle prayer. Just made that up. Second thing, I think some of us think of God and prayer as kind of this, like, God's like this, you know, giant, maybe scary, judgmental, gray-bearded Santa Claus. And it all depends if you're naughty or nice. So if you're good, oh yeah, God will give you your prayer requests. And if you're bad, well, you're getting a bag of coal. Now, I could give us a bunch of other examples, But let me just say that that is not the way that prayer works. That's not the understanding of God. It's not the view of God that we have in terms of what Jesus has shown us. Jesus says, He is your Father. Our Father. I think, unfortunately, the reality is for a lot of us here, we have a really hard time understanding God as Father. And it breaks my heart because I think there's a lot of people in here that your earthly father has perhaps abused you emotionally, physically, verbally, sexually. Some of you, statistics will show us, you actually maybe haven't even ever known your earthly father. Or maybe he just hasn't been around that much. And so for you to think of God as Father, I mean, that is painful. Not only is that painful, but why would you want to think of God as your Father in light of your experiences of your earthly father? And if that's you, and we just want to provide the space to say, hey, I'm so sorry that you've had to experience that. It's not the way it's supposed to be. That's not the way God set up fatherhood. The good news, though, is that all of us, to some degree, have imperfect fathers. I am an imperfect father. I'm not perfect. Now, some of us are more imperfect than others. So I get that. But the gospel, Jesus, prayer, and a bunch of other things, community and therapy, huge advocate of therapy. You have it is possible for you to have a redeemed experience to get to know your true, loving, and trusting Father. And so I just want to say that this morning. Most of you know, I'm a new dad, just become a dad a little under 4 months ago. We have a little boy named Parker. He's right up here right now. He's probably asleep listening to me. And one of the things, if you're a parent, you know this, you find this out real quick, is that it's just crazy. You have this little human being that is completely, entirely dependent upon you, right? So my wife, Rachel, and I, Parker is 100% dependent upon us to feed him, to change his diapers, to make sure that he's safe and locked into his stroller, his car seat, to soothe him when he cries. I joke with Rachel all the time, like, man, that's the life. Yeah, I mean, like, I wish someone did that for me. You don't have to do anything. Like, that's pretty awesome. It's a good setup. But here's the thing. The last couple of weeks, you know, I'm more like sentimental now that I'm a dad. And I've just been thinking about, and it's like a classic movie scene. You know, like when I, 2-3 years from now, he's not old enough to do this yet. But when I come home from work and I open the front door, and maybe Parker is like already kind of gleaming through the window and he sees my car rolling up and he gets all excited, right? And I open the front door and he runs up to me and he grabs my legs or he grabs my waist and I pick him up and I swirl him in the air and I just give him this huge kiss and he's probably saying, Daddy's home. That is the posture of prayer for a follower of Jesus. You catch that? Parker's just running to me. And God's just kind of, run to me. I'm your father. I'm your dad. See, prayer, it isn't just about you submitting your laundry list to God as much as it is about you spending time with your good father. Prayer's not a laundry list. It's about you spending time with your father. Here's a simple definition of prayer. Prayer is just talking with God. Simple definition, talking with God. And intentionally use the word with. I think a lot of people think prayer is talking to God. That's a one-way conversation. Prayer is a two-way conversation. You have to also listen from God. And so we're going to be exploring that in this series, all different types of prayer. But this morning, I just want to start off asking you, do you want to know, or do you want to know your Heavenly Father even more? Do you just want His embrace? Do you want to know and to realize that you are completely, utterly dependent upon him? Next phrase, Jesus says, our Father. And then he says, our Father in heaven. In heaven. What does that mean for God to be in heaven? Just the other day, actually, in our front office, I had a conversation with JJ, Dina's son. We actually talked about this little thing because he told me, well, Mark, isn't God up in the sky? JJ's a very smart little individual, so we were able to get a little sophisticated. I said, well, JJ, is God really up in the sky? Like, is it that you can maybe take a space shuttle and go all the way up, and maybe once you get past the last planet, like, you're going to run into God? You know what I mean? I think most of us, when we hear the word heaven, I mean, most people just kind of automatically look up. And so heaven is up there, wherever there is, and everybody's sitting on a cloud playing a harp. And you've heard me talk about this before. Heaven in the Bible, it doesn't really refer to as being up there as much as heaven refers to God's reality, God's presence, God's sphere, God's dimension, if you will. Where God is worshiped, where his will is done, where his power and his authority are respected, that is where heaven is. And so the point is that not only is God our Father and this loving, intimate dad, but he's also powerful and he's everywhere. Heaven isn't up there. Heaven is where God's power and presence and where people are worshiping and obeying his will, where his will is done. That is heaven. And so the prayer here is that heaven is actually rushing and bursting towards you. Our Father in heaven, God invites us to encounter him, his presence, and his power. Heaven is a lot closer than you think. Our Father in heaven, next phrase, hallowed be your name. Hallowed be your name. Chances are you haven't used the word hallowed recently, you know, in conversation in your vocabulary. At least I don't. What does it mean? What does to be hallowed mean? It means this, to sanctify, to honor. Simple, most literal way to put it is simply to set apart. So what Jesus is saying here is that when you pray, you are to pray that you set God alone as your priority in your life. That you set God apart in your life. Like he is number one. That God should be your hope, your longing, your desire. That we set apart God as king in our life. Hallowed be your name. So when you spend time praying to the Father, what you're doing is you're actually saying, God, may you be the number one priority in my life. You are more important than me watching the Laker game, even though LeBron James is a Laker now. And praise God for that. See, I was a Kobe fan. A lot of Kobe fans are LeBron haters. Man, if he's a Laker, I'm in. Let's get those rings. Who here is excited for the Lakers this season coming up? Okay, I'll stop there. Another thing, when you're spending your time with your Father and you're praying and you're crying out to him, you know what you're doing? You're saying that he's more important, that he's a larger priority than your iPhone and checking Facebook, Instagram, or Snapchat. When you're with your Father and you're praying and you're asking him for his name to be hallowed, what you're saying is that he's more important than you spending a couple extra hours of work on the weekend or checking your email at 9 o'clock at night. Listen to this. Prayer reorders your desires. Prayer reorders your desires. When we pray, hallowed be your name, we are reprioritizing our minds, our hearts, your body. I think this is why Jesus follows his petition of hallowed be your name with this. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. You Hopefully you begin to recognize the pattern going on here. Jesus starts off the prayer, immediately directing us to the Father. And he says, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, right? Asking heaven to come forward into earth, not just waiting the rest of your life for heaven. No, the prayer, the kingdom prayer of Jesus for heaven to come now. But that heaven is all about God. Hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done. This prayer that Jesus gives, which is typically called the Lord's Prayer, I think it should be called the disciples' prayer, because the whole point of Jesus giving this prayer is that his disciples say it. He gives us a very clear template of what our prayer life should look like. And here's the thing, it should be radically God-centered. Our prayer life should be radically God-centered. Let me throw out a couple examples. Does Jesus start off this prayer just pleading with God to keep him healthy for his basketball game the next day? Does Jesus start off his prayer, you know, just begging to God, God, man, I have something so important tomorrow night. I'm cooking this new recipe and some people are coming over. Will you please let it go well? Oh, Jesus, I have this biology exam tomorrow. I need you to give me an A. You know, if you don't care about A's, you're like, dude, just give me a 70%. I'm good. Does Jesus start off his prayer like that? No. Jesus starts off his prayer by focusing on the love, the power, the intimacy of God and his kingdom. Now, let me be clear. Maybe you're here thinking like, wow, I'm not that holy, Mark. Like, yeah, I'm asking God about my biology test. You know what I mean? Like, let me be clear. God wants you to bring your everyday, normal requests to him. Absolutely. Hear me loud and clear. But here's the thing. That comes in the second half of the prayer. Give us our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses. Deliver us from the evil. Protect us from temptation. So Jesus gets there. Next Sunday, come back. That's what we're talking about. But here's the point. Jesus doesn't start there. I think one thing I realized, and this is the most convicting thing for me this past week in preparing for this. I think most of us, we don't pray the disciples' prayer or the Lord's prayer. We pray the American middle class prayer. And the American middle class prayer always starts with things like, give us our daily bread. We love the request of, you know, deliver us. Yeah, God, deliver me from whatever bad situation I'm in. Protect me. I think that's how most Americans pray. And Jesus says, other way around. Let me say this. Prayer is more about you spending time with your Father than it is about getting things from your Father. Prayer is more about you spending time with your Father than it is about getting things from your Father. Full of stories, examples this morning. Imagine if I go home from work every day and I open the front door. Instead of little Parker coming up to me, I begin talking to Rachel right away, my wife. And I say, hey, Rachel, I need a massage. Hey, Rachel, I need you to turn on the TV for me so I can start watching the Laker game. Hey, Rachel, I need you to get dinner made for me. Wow, I love it. This is good. My point will be better now that you've said that. You know, what if I said, hey, why don't you watch Parker because I need to go out on a run? How would things go if those are the requests that I made, just to begin with, but especially when I just got home and I'm talking to Rachel for the first time that night? Are things going to go that well? Some wives are like, dude, that's what you do to me, bro. Listen up. Right? I mean, not only is that common sense, but it's rude, right? It's not intimate. At that point, what I'm saying, if I'm behaving like that, is that, hey, I'm actually more interested in the things that Rachel can do for me than I am actually just spending time with her. Because I love her. And I just want to be with her. I think most of us start off our prayers like that. Yeah, so like we laugh about it. It's funny. I mean, crazy thing. Think about how God receives your prayers. Of course, can't get into God's mind. I'm just saying, I think a lot of us start our prayers that way. God, I'm in this situation. I need you to give me this. We don't do that with our normal relationships now. So why would we treat God that way? Rather than starting off his prayer with a laundry list, Jesus just says metaphorically, let's just run to the Father and let's just embrace him. And not only do I want to be with him, but I want to become like him. I want his will, his kingdom, his name to be hallowed. God doesn't want your laundry list. He does, but what he's far more interested in is just you. And the reality is, I think when we approach God that way, when we approach prayer that way, here's what I think happens. If we're God-centered, I think everything else falls into place. The main thing has got to be the main thing. Yes, absolutely. Jesus wants you to give God your requests about your biology test. That's fine. But that shouldn't be your priority. So I want to go over real quick this morning as we start this series, some really practical prayer tips. And let me just start off by being really transparent. And I'm talking about myself here. So I'm not just judging everyone. Unless you're like a saint here, like Corey Knossen has like a halo above her head. And yeah, she's laughing. She knows it. So unless you're Corey Knossen, I'm going to guess that your prayer life is probably not that good, right? Probably pretty dry. I mean, at least mine is. I'm just speaking out of myself. And so, you know, it's interesting. I think the temptation is when you hear someone preach on prayer, I usually think this is kind of the reaction. First, you'll feel very guilty and ashamed, like, okay, yep. That's not me. I do a horrible job. I'm never going to get there. Things of that nature. But then, you know, maybe you feel a little like revved up, a little convicted. And so like in your mind, like you're going to leave here and, oh man, I'm going to pray for 20 days this week. And there's only 7 days in a week, but somehow I'm going to pray for 20 days this week. Or I'm going to wake up at 5:30 in the morning and I'm going to be praying for 2 hours. And the reality is if you do that, it's not going to work. You will fail. I will fail. So one of the things in the last like 5-6 months, Rachel, my wife, a dream has come true for her in our marriage. I've started to run. Rachel's a marathon runner, if you don't know that. And when I first started running, well, actually wasn't even running, you know, just kind of like walking fast. Right? We've all been there. And I couldn't even do a mile without stopping. Right? But and then there's also my egotistical side. I'm very competitive. I'm a perfectionist. And so, you know, what I would do is, and I wanted to show off to Rachel and like not let her beat me. And so I would just sprint and take off in the very beginning. And anybody who knows running, I mean, that's not how running works. At least if you're running for a couple miles or so. And so I'd be done before I'd finished 1 mile. But if you look at running as a process, and this is what the point I'm trying to make here is, I think you should view prayer as a process. You have to practice prayer. In the theology world, we would call it a spiritual discipline. Okay, running is a practice. You have to practice running. You're not going to be a stud right away. And so after I run 1 mile, by then my body adjusts and I can start running 2 miles. And after I run 2 miles for a couple weeks, then I can do 4 miles. After 4 miles a couple weeks, I can do 6 miles. Anybody marathon training here? Anybody ever done it before? Demi. Is it just Demi? Gary? Is it just Gary and Demi? Any other marathon trainers in here? Okay. Wow. Well, let me just speak to you two then. Gosh, I shouldn't have asked that question. Go ask them. This marathon training, you build. You're not running 26 miles week one, right? No, absolutely not. Your body has to adapt. Your muscles grow. Your stamina increases. I'm a nerd and I've read some like neuroscience stuff. It's actually the same way with your brain and your mind when you pray. Don't try to pray for 2 hours when you start. Try 5-10 minutes. Do that for a while. That'll turn into 15-20. That'll turn into 30-40. And down the road we go. Here's what I want to challenge everyone with here this morning. Can you pray 3 times a day? Now, you're probably freaking out at that number, 3 times a day. 5 minutes each. 5 times 3, 15 minutes. 15 minutes a day. Back at the time of Jesus, first century ancient world, when he gave the disciples prayer, there was actually a very similar prayer to that already in existence that they were reciting at the synagogue. They would recite it breakfast, lunch, dinner, 3 times a day. Very, very similar. Jesus, very smart man, obviously. I think he intentionally designs the disciples' prayer to not be wordy. That's one of his points in it. It's short, it's simple, and it's God-centered. If you don't know where to start, just recite these exact words, breakfast, lunch, dinner, 5 minutes each. Say it a couple times. Once you get comfortable with it, and again, neurologically, you don't want me to get into that kind of stuff. It'll become natural for you. And then I think what you can start doing, I think the primary point of Jesus' prayer is that it's a template for us to follow. Some traditions say you have to say it exactly. And I think there's value to that. So I'm with that. But I think you can also plug in your own situations and circumstances as you say it, meaning this. So when you pray, you know, God, may your kingdom come, may your will be done on earth as is heaven. God, may your kingdom come in my neighborhood in Long Beach as it is in heaven. God, I pray that when I meet with this person at the coffee shop, that your kingdom would come, that your will be done in that Starbucks or whatever Denny's, wherever you're at. Next thing. You have to prioritize your prayer life. It's not going to just happen naturally. And that's a little scary. But think about it. Everything else in life, if you're going to eat healthy, if you're going to go to the gym, if you're going to date your spouse, everything of worth and value usually requires intentionality for it. Especially with how busy and crazy and hectic our schedules are now. Let me read you these two quotes that I think speak into this. I find these fascinating. Paul Miller, he says this. Learning to pray doesn't offer us a less busy life. So not saying that. Not saying like, oh, if you pray, like your life's not going to be busy, you know, blah, 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 blah. I love this though. He says, it offers us a less busy heart. In the midst of outer busyness, we can develop an inner quiet. Man, doesn't that just push you at peace? Next quote, Martin Luther. This is probably my favorite. Martin Luther says this. I have so much business. I cannot get on without spending 3 hours daily in prayer. You catch what he's saying there? We have it the other way around. We say, oh, I can't pray. I'm too busy. Well, he says, no, I'm so busy that I have to pray. What a paradigm shift. So my challenge for us this morning, do you make prayer a priority in your everyday? Prayer is just talking with God. Another way of asking this is, when do you find yourself praying? Do you find yourself praying only during a crisis or a tragedy or when there's something that like you really want or need? Oh yeah, yeah, you're on your hands and your knees praying then. But as we've seen, prayer is about communing. Prayer is about talking with God. There's, I wouldn't say a church father, but she's a female, a church mother, I guess, a couple hundred years ago. She has a quote that says, prayer is your soul uniting to God. Prayer is uniting your soul to God. Do you spend time in prayer just to spend time with God? Or are you doing it to get something from him? Here's the last thing. And I have to say this because I hear this all the time in the church, not just New Life, but church in general. You hear people, oh, I'm just always constantly praying. And they, you know, the verse Paul says, pray without ceasing. And so people like this, oh yeah, I'm in line at Trader Joe's, I'm praying. Oh, I'm driving, I'm praying. Oh, I'm at my son's Little League game, oh, I'm praying. Oh, I'm at the, you know, the slot machines in Vegas, I'm praying. And on the one hand, I can't argue with that. I mean, it comes across as like really holy and pure, except for maybe the Vegas part. I mean, what do you say back to that? And then I was thinking about it this week. Do you treat the other serious relationships in your life like that? Meaning, wow, full of, well, you guys are just really getting to know the marriage of Rachel and I this morning. We're not perfect people, okay? So Rachel's one of her pet peeves with me. This is like every guy, is, you know, I'll be at home, and let's say I'm watching a sports game on TV. Let's say I'm surfing online, I'm reading a book, what have you. And Rachel tries to engage in conversation with me. And so I'll act like I'm paying attention, you know, and I kind of do the, oh, yeah, yeah, yep, okay, yep, I'll do that. You got that, baby. I just heard some, mm-hmm. And then, you know, 30 minutes go by. Hey, Mark, is the chicken ready? Chicken? What are you talking about, the chicken ready? You never asked that. Oh, yeah, I asked that 30 minutes ago. You told me you'd do it. No, I don't think so. You know what I mean? And the conversation goes down. People who are like always constantly praying, okay, sure, yeah, it seems holy and pure, and I get that. But I just want to say, in reality, I don't think we give our spouse or boyfriend, girlfriend, best friend, children, whoever you are, your special people in your life, they probably get irritated with you if you don't give them your full attention when you're with them. So I'm also of the opinion that I think prayer, I think you should probably put your iPhone away, close your laptop, turn the TV off. Probably be in a silent, quiet room. I mean, this is coming from Mark, and this isn't in the Bible, but I think it's right. I think God deserves our full attention. I think that's part of hallowing his name. So that's what I have to say this morning about prayer. The music team is going to come up. They're going to lead us into our response time. The first song we're singing is actually a version of the Lord's Prayer or the disciples' prayer, a kingdom prayer. And so I would just encourage you to just to sing that prayer out. Think about the words. Think about how they may come true in your life. What does it look like for God's kingdom, for his will to be done in your life? Not Mark's will, not Mark's kingdom, but God's. What does it look like for you to set apart God as holy in your prayer life? And so as always, we have multiple response stations available. I think this morning, communion offers a beautiful picture of this. The bread and the cup symbolizing the body and the blood of Jesus sacrificed and spilt for us that gives us full access to the Father. It's because Jesus died for us that we can call him Daddy and Father. As a son or daughter of the King, there's no guilt, there's no shame. You can approach him in complete confidence because of what Jesus has done for you, anytime, anywhere. That is good news. That is gospel truth. Maybe some of us want to recommit our prayer lives. We have candles over here to signify that. There's a prayer team. As always, the ushers will come forward to receive your offering. As Rachel mentioned, we are a part of that, taking a special offering for the earthquakes in Indonesia. And so you can notate that on your envelope if you want to do that. There's also that option online. And so as we begin to respond, I just pray that new life, that in this season of prayer, that we adopt the disciples' prayer of Jesus, not just for this season. Oh yeah, we'll do it for 6-7 weeks. But this becomes ingrained into us. So let's just invite the Holy Spirit into our lives and worship.